Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Weekend Podcast. I'm joined by Peter and Steve. You're on, lads.
Hello.
I'm good, thank you.
And I'm good, thank you. And do you know what? Listen, we are recording this on Brexit Day. Yes, we finally left the EU. Hey, all right. Wow. I think we'll be saying that in a year's time, you know?
Yeah.
I think it'll be down to the case where our kids, we say, Daddy, have we left the EU yet? No, son, not yet. We're having a final vote on it next week. Yes. It's never going to happen, is it? It's never going to happen.
No. And you know what? It's funny that people and yourself voted to leave, and it's funny that you wanted this parliament to run our country. Great.
But do you know what? The ironic thing is, right, Theresa May, do you remember, but she would have got a majority here now if she hasn't, basically what she did, do you remember she went for a general election just to strength, just to strengthen up her majority? They had a majority anyway in the House of Parliament. They had the most amount of MPs now, the Conservatives, right? She said, oh, it's not under my mandate though, this was David Cameron's government. So, well, at the time, of course, Corbyn was way behind the polls and stuff. Of course he would be, because he's an idiot. But anyway, she said, I'd strengthen up my majority here. So she went for a general election and literally didn't get a majority. She lost a load of things. So what did she have to do? She had to go to the DUP to get a majority. Say, oh, listen, the Democratic Union Party, can you join us just to make a majority in the House of Commons and we can form
here's a billion pounds.
Yeah, there's a billion quid in the back pocket here. Have that. Now, here we are at Brexit. She's trying to get a deal through, and the only people who want back are the DUP. God, if you hadn't tried to strengthen your position, Theresa, and gone for a weaker one, then it wouldn't have happened, you fool. So
That's hindsight, Justin.
I know, it's just ridiculous, isn't
it? I am with Steve on that, in terms of, like, part of the whole Brexit thing was, oh, yes, take back control and lead. And who is going to lead that? Who's going to do that?
Do you really want these Muppets controlling our country? Yeah,
exactly. Like, the European Parliament, they're a bunch of Muppets. Yeah, sure. But our Parliament is just as big a bunch of Muppets. So
do you know what? Let me say this. The problem is here is that the country is divided. And people say 48, 52, but let's be honest, it's pretty much half and half, isn't it? So we're and also, I think two-thirds pretty much of the government, the House of Commons, voted Remain. So we've got a slight majority. It's a majority that voted to leave. In the House of Commons, you've got a majority who voted to remain. Therein lies the problem. Whatever deal you put ahead of them, people are not... It's not going to work. So it's almost like... I hate to say this, and I want to get out of the European Union, because their economies are trashed. Honestly, they're knackered. All of them are. The Spanish, the Italians, the Portuguese, Germans are the powers is going down the hill. France is knackered. They're all knackered. I mean, it is a sinking ship, the EU. We need to get out. We've got a resilient economy, you know? But as it is, this is not going to work, because you've got too many people saying, oh, let's just stay in. And then some people say, let's just go out. And it's not going to work. I mean, I don't know where we are. We've opened a Pandora's box here. And literally, we cannot get out. We're in the middle of it all now. We can't go backwards. We can't go forward. We are just stuck. It's almost like we are on a little, an iceberg that's melting. And we can't go that way because of sharks. We can't go that way because of crocodiles. And we'll just stand here and let it melt and see what happens. Let's just hope we can convince the sharks and the crocodiles that we are one of them. it's no way back, it's no way forward. I don't know what we do.
Where do you get an iceberg that you have crocodiles next to?
Exactly. Therein lies the oddity.
The oddity
and the conundrum of Brexit. But I just think, do you know what I genuinely think? The problem is here, right? I don't know how we get this over the line. We have to get it over the line, because either way, I don't care. Because, and this has been said so many times, but it is the uncertainty that's more damaging than any deal either way. We need to get back to some kind of normalcy of trading, you know? And people, Daniel, a couple of years on the line, people will not even notice a difference between whether we've left or we haven't. But we have to get back to normal. And at the moment, it's not normal. It's just uncertainty. And that delaying over and over again is the worst thing we can do. And the MPs are just arguing, just get something over the line. We want to go back to normal. Anything at all. Because, you know, whatever we get, it won't be as bad as where we are right now. And that's the thing. It's damaging. People can't see that. It's just damaging right now. And
I think we should just become a communist dictatorship.
Exactly. It's the only way forward. It's the only way backwards.
Exactly. Yeah. Come on, guys.
Do you know what? Because of that, I'm 68% in cash. That answer, it's an avoidable risk. I just see this compounded with everything else. Not only that, you got this happening right now, and our economy is quite resilient considering what's happened. But I think it won't be. I think as long as this goes on, and we start to see this now, it's not just us. For a long time, you know, Europe's been down the drain. Germans, you know, the powerhouse of Europe, their manufacturing is down the drain. But even if you go to the Far East, you know, China, second biggest economy in the world, they're down the drain. I mean, factory activity in China is contracted for the fourth straight month in March. It's quite worrying because they are the factory of the world. For a long time, it's only been the US that's held everyone up pretty much, you know, or been sort of expanding. That has now stopped. That is starting to worry. They're still expanding, but their fourth quarter GDP numbers have been revised down from 2.6%, it's annualized, to 2.2%. That's quite a... And this, I was talking to Russ Mole, actually, investment director at Stockbroker AJ Bell, and he says, when you go into recession, what you have is you release these figures and they get revised about a month later. When they start getting revised down, that's quite worrying. That happens going into recessions. When you get revised up, that's normally bullish. And so you add that, and do you know one of the big things as well? Even Warren Buffett said it looks like things have slowed down. Which he said that yesterday, which is quite worrying. Now there's a thing called the yield curve. It's about the bond markets, you know. And now at the moment, the 10-year versus the 3-month. That means what you get loan for. It's supposed to be shorter dated bonds, like 3 months, should be pay less of a coupon, less of an interest than I say a 10-year, right? But at the moment, it's the other way around. The 10-year is paying less than the 3 months. That's because they see interest rates being lowered further on down. Now, this is a massive indicator of a recession. Look at this. It has this kind of yield curve has led every recession since 1955. It only gave one false signal in the 60s. It's like an 85-90% chance of success that we will have a recession. It will take about a year and a half to come along, but it will happen. That is why I'm bearish on the economy. We will have rallies. We will have rallies. I mean, you can, you know, if you're in stocks, there are certain stocks as well that will still fly, of course. I'm not saying everything will flatten. You can still make money in a bear market, but you've got to be, it's almost like you've got to jab and weave, bob and weave a little bit, you know? Or just play the safe thing, long-term safe thing, you know? And if you are in dividend reinvesting stocks, it's fine. But of all that, the biggest argument this week I've had on Twitter, have a guess what it was about.
Brexit, probably. No. I don't. It could be anything with you, couldn't it? Marmite?
No. Steve, what do you reckon? Out of all that, Brexit, economy, I guess we're arguing with on Twitter today.
The rainforest.
2 days of arguing. It wasn't water, which I did a video on, water there. Did you see my video on water?
I said rainforest.
Yeah, okay. But that's just, you know, rain, essentially. It's water, Steve. Isn't it? Water-based.
When you say rainforest, you're talking about the trees, really, not really the rain, are you?
Well, you know, rainforest, both, isn't it? The forest is the trees, the rain is the water, isn't it?
Oh, look, an argument has started.
The biggest argument I had this week, right, was about speed limiters.
Right.
On cars. People get really precious on that, I tell you that now.
Do they?
Yeah. Do you know what? I had a car, it was a Golf, right, and it had automation, which I loved. Go on the motorway, you just whack it on to 90, 100 mile an hour, 150, no, whatever. But, you know, so you whack it on 70, it would...
You need cruise control.
Yeah, no, listen, so the EU, apparently, and they're going to fit these in new cars from 2022, there'll be tech that'll read speed signs and all that, and they'll make a noise, beep, 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 when you're basically going over the limit, you know? Now, you can switch this off, disable this, right? And people were saying, oh, the EU, basically, what they've done there, no one's going to buy fast cars anymore. No one's going to... They've scuppered the entire EU car market. Some people say, so what are you talking about? We have speed limits anyway. This just reminds you of speed limits. People are really going over the top then. I said, I welcome this anyway, I welcome it. Because most humans are idiots. We are emotional. There are people getting cars who you know, commit awful crimes. They are emotional sort of wrecks in their head. I drive on the motorway, right? I put cruise control on. I'll whack it on 70 miles an hour exactly. And
of course.
And I'll get cars overtake me, right? You know, I'll be in the middle lane. It'll overtake me on the north fast lane. They'll pull into my lane in the middle lane and slow right down. And I have to brake. Then what are you doing? I'm doing.
You're sat in the middle lane, and there's nothing on the slow.
I'm
lane.
Doing a whatever lane I'm in. I'm doing a consistent 70 miles an hour.
Right, so you in the slow lane now, unless you're overtaking.
Well, let's say I'm in the slow lane anyway. I get a car pulling up there. Right, I get a human driving it because the computer's driving my car. They'll come along. They'll overtake, slow right down, inconsistent speed. It caused me to brake. The person behind me is probably too close to me. They have to brake. All right, that creates a concertina effect. That creates jams and all this. And that's the problem. It's the inconsistency of speed and distance between cars that creates crashes and traffic jams. And that's now, if if robots were in charge, we could travel about 200 feet apart at 200 miles an hour. We'd get there faster, there wouldn't be a problem. It's the inconsistency of speed and distance. That's all it is. That's what creates every problem.
It's like that little clip in there. Was it iRobot or Will Smith when all the cars were autonomous? And
What were they?
Autonomous.
All right, yeah.
No, he's right, isn't it?
I thought you were saying someone, a Welsh bloke, Thomas, you said.
All right, okay.
Oh, Thomas!
He puts it into manual mode and the car just starts beeping and flashing red saying, this is dangerous. And it's like, true, isn't it? It's like as soon as you start driving it yourself, it's actually quite dangerous. Let a computer drive it.
Exactly, but the humans, I keep arguing, saying, I have to speed up before to get out of an accident. I thought, that's never happened in your life. Don't give me that nonsense. And anyway, you can override these noises, but I just think the sooner we go to autonomy, the better. Some drivers on the road are dreadful. They're not aware of the inconsistency. Honestly, if you listen to this podcast and get wound up with this, get a car of cruise control, go on the motorway, whack it on a consistent speed, and see how inconsistent humans are. Dreadful drivers. And they're swerving into cars too close behind you. They go too swift. Anyway, listen, there will be less crashes, less deaths on the road when computers take over the driving. Guaranteed. At the moment in this country, about 5 people a day die on the road because of humans. They won't fully automate, which is going to happen by 2021 apparently, or they would be on cars that are, they won't fully automate until it's a lot safer than human error.
Well, what they need is, because as you said, they're not going to completely do it, but they just need, a bit like if you get the lanes where you need two people in the car, you need an auto whatever lane. And as you said, those cars could just go at 70 miles an hour. There won't be any traffic jams, will there?
They'd be able to do 200 miles an hour, Steve. Listen, because they'll be about, you know, you can put a distance as much as you want, but the computer will adjust to get the braking speed. They can up the speed limit completely when they get rid of the human idiots driving. It's fine. Yeah. Humans
are
idiots.
How do you have time to argue about this with people on Twitter?
Because people are paranoid. I like driving the car. And this one lady said, Justin, everyone on Twitter is arguing with you. I said, no, there's about a handful of people on my feed. And I just said, and I didn't say this because I was going to say, do you know why that is? Because people hate forward thinkers. Luddites hate it. Luddites.
So I'm in control of a car.
I want to drive.
What were they arguing against then? What was their argument?
The argument was essentially that the government was starting nanny state again, taking us over. Next thing you know, they'll be telling us what to dress in and how to brush our hair and all this stuff. Yeah. Really going over the top about it. No, they won't. It's about saving lives. You can disable it.
It's the new rule that beep will come on and you can't turn it off.
Yeah, yeah. People it was like back in the Luddites who were scared of machines taking over everything. It won't. Don't be silly.
Because I had that alert on mine, but I turned it off.
Yeah, exactly. That was the thing. But I think the sooner we go to automation, you watch now when it'll get to a stage where, it'll be a dramatic fall in fatalities and all of a sudden they'll start saying, okay, listen, maybe we should take the human element out of this a little bit. Unless you have an exemplary, safety record. I think teenagers or just pass the test and all that, they should have it automated as all. And they can, interact a little bit with it, just maybe steer the car a little bit, bumper cars, the dodgems and stuff, your father steers it for you. Or you can just press the pedal, but nothing else. You can't do anything else,
Having a quick look at the agenda for today's podcast, Brexit, tick. Arguments about speed limiters, tick.
That's because the markets are dire, aren't they? Let's go through some news then. I mean, do you know what? I tell you, out of all the stocks, BIDS, eh? What do you think of BIDS?
Yeah, BIDS stack.
Do you know what BIDS stands for?
bloody incredible demonstration of skill.
That was quite good. Steve, go for it, quick. BIDS, what does it stand for?
Big International... Dominoes.
Big International Dominoes. Yeah, S. Mm. The S is for what?
on the dominoes.
I tell you what it stands for, guys. I'll give you one tip here. This is what it stands for, right? Buy in dips, stupid. All right? That's what it stands for. That's what it stands for. Every time you see a dip, it's not going to happen very often. Buy in dips. That's what I'm doing. I mean, tell you now, I'm buying what is, you know. Listen, this is going to be a phenomenal. I've transcribed, and I do a video on the weekend, transcribed that chat I had with James. And he said a lot in that. And I've gone over it and over again. Do you know, two-thirds of adverts on the internet now are programmatic. You know, two-thirds of that. And that's growing. Apart from Facebook, obviously, and Google. Two-thirds are programmatic. They are the only guys who have got native, programmatic, in-game, dynamic adverts, you know? They've, at the moment, two live. The Codemasters, which is one of the games they've gone with, of course, is a rally game. They've got two games with them. They said that in the RNS when it first came out. But yet, they haven't revealed what the second game is. Now, F1 game is coming out. And that's going to happen. But I think once they get this, they went to the game developers conference, of course, and all this stuff. There's lots of chat there. But there's so many avenues. Listen, somebody just said to me recently, he said, what's going to happen? You know, Apple and Google are going for a subscription model. What's going to happen to in-game advertising? I said, well, listen, BidStack will only do adverts if it's natural to the game. I said, with football games, with racing games, when there's advertising, like F1 games, for example, there's natural advertising in real life, isn't it, around those? So they'll only have adverts where it's natural to the environment because, you know, games are trying to be realistic. So if you have a game, like an F1 thing, there's no adverts on the hoardings, you know, in the pits and all that stuff, that's not natural. You know, it's going to reflect the realism as a real game. And that's where the advertising opportunities lay. But James said, listen, they had a problem. There was no drop-down. You know, when people go in to select the advertising campaigns, there was no drop-down for in-game native. They're the first people to do this. And after, because of this, they have to go through the IAB and all this stuff. They are trailblazers. But I genuinely think it could be massive. And he said on that podcast, he said, we're in Avocet. That was a big challenge because we're creating a new category and we've had a chat with the IAB, the International Advertising Agency, to sort this out. We're doing that as well. That's been sorted. Now we're in the first programmatic DSP, you know, demand side programmatic server sort of thing. We can go in loads of them. He said, I expect to release news on bigger DSPs coming soon. We'll be RNSing about that. Then they talk about a new platform coming in July that they'll be having investors down to where they are and you can watch it work and all this stuff. They talked about sort of secondary market where people watch on Twitch or on YouTube. I just genuinely think it's going to be massive because why wouldn't anyone? First of all, it's non-destructive. First and foremost, the most important thing here, I think, and they said this several times, is the game's experience. You can't degrade that, all right? So as long as that's not degraded, it's fine. You'll see adverts where they naturally would be placed in real life, all right? So that'll happen. Who wouldn't want, then, a revenue stream off the side of this? That tech they've got, that tech about sort of putting tracking pixels in their tech, it's phenomenal. So basically, they'll give the impression numbers to the clients, the brands, and all that stuff. But then this one brand said, "Oh well, how can we want independent verification?" I said, "Okay, we'll set up this kind of new tech called a tracking pixel, and this tracking pixel will show how many impressions have happened." So they are trailblazing in so many different ways, and I just think there'd be lots of news coming out right now. They're just proof of concept. I genuinely think this is like a Vasarian EVRH, but with a sustainable future, and I see this. In excess of 100 million market cap quite easily on the next bits of food, bits of news. So buy in dip, stupid. And I'm saying this for, you know, just for me and you two who have highly researched it. Not for people listening who haven't researched it and think this is podcast investment advice. It is not, you know.
No.
But, and it's not a company to trade. It's a company, I just think on dips, you buy, you hold. And it'll be churning out big chunks of money. There's so many things in that podcast. So many bits of info. I'll put it on a video, and you can see it. But I think it's the real deal. I think BIDS is the real deal. You know what I'm saying?
Now, how much of a dip are you looking for before you buy
anything? Have you seen the momentum on this thing, this stock?
It's
it is not. Well, I mean, it is
talking
not.
Talking on Friday afternoon as we are, it's 2% down today.
Right. That, to me, do you know, even today, at the moment, it's quite, I mean, it's not overbought on the RSI, you know, it's gone up I mean, if you look at the chart, it's gone up and gone up and gone up. But you have to look at the valuation of this company. You know, I think if you get any kind of dip, take a little bit of advantage. Don't go nuts, because the momentum here is very strong. If you look at the ratio of buys to sells, it's actually 50-50. So, and yet more people are knowing about it. I'm seeing whenever I mention Bidstack on Twitter, more people are tweeting and retweeting. This is called, and you can get other people comparing, saying, oh, I saw someone compare another gaming and said, oh, that's valid above this. Someone compared it to Gfinity. Gfinity was is an esports game. Okay, but it's they own a little arena in Fulham, and people come along, teams play there, and it's all sponsored, and they sponsored games, and they're hooked up with all the big companies. But, you know, scalability on that is not as big as Bidstack, and Bidstack can scale with little capital, you know. Apart from opening new arenas everywhere, or they wouldn't need to do that anyway, but, I mean, you know, I just think the scalability, and also what you're not understanding is momentum and hype. You know, when you've got momentum in stock...
Mm. I'm understanding that.
When people get that, when people are with it and start retweeting and going with it, it just builds and builds and builds, you know, and you'll see volume going like crazy. You watch a bit of news drop. This is rising on no news. You wait till a bit of news drops, it'll fly. And so I think any opportunity here, you know, to scale in, if it drops, you know, especially if you get a daily drop below 5% or more.
Yeah.
I think...
I'm seeing it as potentially a stock where I might sell a mongrel to buy a pedigree, and another stock in my portfolio that perhaps has disappointed. I might get rid of that and put it into Bidstack when it dips, and recover my losses.
Absolutely.
Potentially.
It's almost like saying, listen, I may have to put this dog down just to get the lead in the collar, because I want that, and I'm going to go, you know, I got a lot of dogs in the house. Put them all down.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Get the leads in the collars. Sell a couple of dogs. You know, I don't know. Can you sell a mongrel? I don't know these days. I mean, if you can, sell a mongrel and sell about 10 mongrels and get a pedigree. You know, because those mongrels basically they're crossbred and they've got faults, so they're inbred pretty much. So get some.
They're worth less if you put them down.
Yeah, they are, actually. I mean, selling a mongrel is hard enough as it is. A dead mongrel.
A dead mongrel. Oh, yes, please, I'll have 10.
So there we are. We maybe do some culture somewhere, I'm sure.
Another stock I was going to mention, and you won't because you both sold out of it, was Predator. That's had a good week.
Oh, it has, yes. Do you know what I'm annoyed at? This is what I'm annoyed at. Listen. Predator, right? Very similar to Bidstack in what respect, guys?
BOD owns a lot of it.
That's it. So do you know what? That right there, when you get the board of directors, CEO, owning something like, more than 10%, right?
Yeah.
They mean business. They do look after shareholders because they are a substantial shareholder. And basically, it's an excellent filter there. Look at any company. And do you know what? I give an example. Do you know what? I sold Brave Bison this week.
Did you?
Yeah, the update was good. But
right.
Do you know what annoyed me, right? On the day of the update, which on the day of the update was quite nice. I bagged on that anyway. 102% I got on it. But on the day of the update, right? There's a lot of volume going through, selling volume. Then what's going on here? Okay, it's risen quite a bit, fair enough. But too much, considering now they're a cash generative company and they're going in the right direction. It's a turnaround story, clear hand is bought in. Turns out the day, and I said on Twitter, I said, I wouldn't be surprised to see a TR1 come out here saying someone's selling, because there's too much volume going, it's ridiculous volume, and the share price is going down, so 16% down on the day. And the next day, do you know who's selling out? The CFO, the Chief Financial Officer.
That's not good.
No, and I thought, and the board themselves, they brought in a sort of, you know, turnaround stories. They're not owners, they're sort of managers pretty much, you know, that's the difference. And I thought, do you know what? The CFO is selling out. I was selling out, full stop. I got profit.
I thought they weren't allowed to do it 30 days either side of any news.
Well, no. After the news, they are. Once the news is out, it's fine.
After the news is out. Okay.
So I just thought, do you know what? I'll get out. In this market, I'm very cautious. I'm very bearish. I'll reevaluate. And I think there's potential there going forward. I really do. But I think, do you know what? That has really annoyed me. The CFO is selling more than half his holding. Selling out at the start. I thought, that's ridiculous. I think, why is he doing that right after the final results? That doesn't, inspire me with confidence for the future of that company. You know, I mean, the company may do well in the future, but the CFO should not be selling out like that in mass after the final results. It's just a really bad sign, isn't it? And so that's what I'm saying. He didn't. He doesn't own a massive percentage of stock. You know.
So but anyway, back to Predator.
Predator, listen, yes, of course it's got massive potential. I mean, and like I said, Paul Griffiths there owns about half the company. So, of course, I mean, anything he does, I did sell out on those convertible loan notes announcement, which is a bit silly. And he did take him on the podcast, and I did kick myself. He said, listen, I'm not going to do anything to damage this company when I own 50% of the stock. I'm a shareholder, a big shareholder. Why would I damage myself? So, of course, it's done very well, hasn't it?
For me, it's another one of those stocks where I look to recover losses from other stocks through this one, I think. And I've de-risked and I've taken some profit. And then I'm hoping my holding that I've got in it now continues to rise. It might not. And if it doesn't and it falls to the floor, then oh well. But I haven't lost anything. But if it does, it's worth holding on to, obviously, because it's going to hopefully claw back some money I've lost elsewhere. But anyway.
I mean, I see that Europa Metals have just done a fundraising, Steve. I mean, you were worried about those because you didn't sell at the top. I sold pretty much the remaining of my stock in that when they came out with the scoping study with no figures in it. You know, I thought, what's going on there? Well, that's not scoping because the ASX. But I mean, you held in the Steve, now you're decimated. But the thing is, there was a worry, a real worry, I think, at one point. People started worrying whether they're going to raise any cash and whether they're going to go to the wall, you know. But they've raised cash. It's not ideal. They, you know, they've raised like a, they were valued at 1.1 million and they raised £900,000. So literally diluted. You know, double the amount of shares in issue, pretty much.
So, in this market, raising that sort of capital is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, there's Warren said, well, listen, you know, they can develop that project now, which is in Spain, and go forward against the backdrop of a, you know, a bit of a bearish resource sort of environment. But listen, they lived another day, and they hopefully raised the value in that. And I got to say, I'm quite encouraged to see Miles Campion taking some stock in the company, who's one of the directors there, so that's good. And Colin Bird. And that's one of the reasons why it wouldn't have gone down, gone through, because Colin Bird, you know, like I said, again, holds some stock in the company, so he wouldn't want to lose that. So, of course, he's going to get over the line there.
Funny, Paddy just messaged us. He's saying, is it a good time to average down on that?
I would wait. There's warrants in there. Wait for a while. What's the rush, you know? Wait for a while. Don't put more money into it. At the moment, in a bullish market, I'm happy to average down and stuff. You know, in a bearish market, I'm less keen to do so. You don't know where it's going, you know?
It's very hard to pick a bottom, isn't it?
Exactly. There we are. I don't know. I'm sure Steve has, you know. Steve has picked the bottom and he's sold. But there we are. What else is there? By the way, Tuple, again, so 3 months without any news. I'm starting to get worried. In this market, I'm worried. People messaging me saying negative things from bulletin boards. Don't listen to other people sometimes. It's not worth it. And I sold right down. And then all of a sudden, Andy came on the podcast. Everything's going as fine. You know, it's fine. We don't need cash until cash generation.
Patience.
So again, I just think now on down days, I will be picking up the stock there because I just think it's not a high margin business, not a unique business like Bids, but they are, you know, creating record revenue every month. And I think they did say, reiterated again for the fourth time, they wouldn't need cash and they'd be cash generative before they needed to raise any money. They won't need raising money, maybe. I don't know, who knows. But so I'm quite encouraged by that. But I have scaled out a little in that, you know. So, my advice to you, Steve, is start scaling to IUKD. Okay, that's the iShares ETF. FTSE 350, it covers 50 companies from the FTSE 350, all high dividend payers. That, if you look at the chart on that, they're not far off a multi-year low. So the dividend is 6.6%. You get paid that on a quarterly basis, obviously split into four, that would be. But on a quarterly basis, you paid that and reinvest the dividends. And I think over 10 years, it's done 170%. That's just buying and holding. And listen, so and of course, we're down. This is down from a little bit. So I think you do a lot better than that for now. You've bought on dips. And I'd start buying that, Steve, almost in quarterly, just to get the dividend. I'd top up every quarter. You'd be fine. I wouldn't worry about big oversells in the RSI. I would genuinely start to do that for you. This is a retirement fund. You're talking about putting a little bit in every quarter. And I think by the time you retire, you have a nice little nest egg there. But like I said, there's uncertainty ahead. You may want to get some other dips. But I think by buying a little bit every quarter, you're averaging. And also, you'll be reinvesting dividends, which will also be averaging down for you. So I just think you should start going into that, you know, 50 of the biggest companies on the FTSE to pay good dividends. It's a decent IUKD. I'll put that on the video, okay, this weekend, so you can have a look at that. But all the big companies involved there, all Dutch Shell, all the big dividend payers, HSBC, It's, you know, I just think.
So would you say that was the best one out of all the ones? Because you've.
Well, it's hard to say. It's hard to say what the best. I would go for a dividend payer, because if the share price goes on further, you get a better yield. The yield would go up, you know, so you're getting paid more. So yeah, but I would say pay regularly into that and genuinely, and an ISA. Of course, you don't get charged for that. No profits, no dividends. So yeah, I generally go for that. I would say.
So which fund company is that?
That's iShares BlackRock, which is obviously the biggest in the world. That's a company, but iShares BlackRock, IUKD. It's called.
Well, I watched a video on you do it this week, and I'll look at that.
But I'm into that. I've got a little bit of that already, and but I think it's one of the safest places. It's at the moment, it's accumulation of dividends, and I worked out if you just average 5%. At the moment, it's 6%. Let me just send somebody a message. Let me with you.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. This is Justin. He's going to read a private message now.
No, so someone's actually messaging me on Skype to have the interview. But anyway, yes, I think, you know, these kind of long-term, you know, aim, Steve, every now and again, but I think, honestly, you should up your portfolio to terms of funds of 80% in funds. And 20% should be taking the odd punt on bid stacks, you know? And then the profit you earn from that.
In the immediate future, though, because there's just a couple that I'm just going to sit and so like EUZ and stuff. It's like, it's just pointless selling out of it, because I'll just need to buy 20 bagger on something else. It's just, you know, not going to happen, is it?
Yeah, but the chance of a 20 bagger, you're better off earning 6.6% over, you know, even if the share price goes nowhere, you own 6.6%. And then if it goes up, you earn even more. But yeah, there we are. Okay. Anything else, lads? I've got to speak to someone who's, you know, about stocks or shares. But is there anything else?
Oh, right, fine. You're ditching us, eh?
Yeah, pretty much, yes. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. No problem. No, nothing else to discuss at this stage, I don't think.
Okay, lovely. And anything else? No, that's it. Apart from that, we're all good. Runners, water will be running out in 25 years' time. You know, cool. So, Steve, don't worry about retirement. You won't have any water to drink anyway. So, it's fine.
Start stocking up with the water. Start filling containers and putting in your shed.
Yeah, there's a water ETF, actually, which I bought some. Anyway, lovely. It's called IH2O on ETF everything. But there we are. You can see there's a previous video on that. Lovely, lads. Have a nice weekend. And
you too.
Enjoy your first weekend outside the EU, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Au revoir.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Talking about money is hard. People all over the world were taught never to talk about money, politics, sex, or religion in polite company. But on this show, my goal is to remove money from that list. And so I'm excited to bring you 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning from Blind Nil Audio and executive producers Chip and Joanna Gaines. Follow and listen to 50 Fires, a podcast about money and meaning with me, Carl Richards, wherever you get your podcasts.